Before we start, this episode contains some chat that might be triggering for some listeners. If that sounds like it might apply to you, do check the show notes for more details. Hello, I'm Fern Cotton, and this is Happy Place, the show that demystifies all the many ideas floating around about mental health. Today, I'm catching up with Will Young.
It allowed me to avoid stuff, so I'd obsess about work. But also, I was like, never felt good enough. Looking at other people, constantly comparing myself, constantly looking at other people and thinking, oh, they're better than me. So I wasn't really enjoying it, but wasn't really aware. Because I was a high achiever, it was easy. I'd win a competition. Right, now I'll stick around. I'll go and do a movie. Easy. I'll go and do a play. You know, I mean, literally, it's like high functioning, high avoiding.
Will obviously burst into our lives in 2002 when he won the first ever Pop Idol series. Since then, he's gone on to not only make gorgeous music, but perform on the West End and in films, and now he's written a book. Be Yourself and Happier, the A to Z of Wellbeing, is Will's exploration into navigating our emotions after his experience of depression and anxiety in his own life. He came round to mine a couple of weeks ago, and while we maybe didn't get through an entire A to Z of mental health, we did bond over our inability to deal with rejection and our thoughts on how to deal with physically getting older. I loved this chat. We covered some really difficult ground, but we also had a right hoot. I mean, we laughed so much. It was wonderfully deep and wonderfully real and very funny. Will is hilarious. I think you're going to absolutely love this. Enjoy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, let's do it. This is the show. Hi, Will Young.
Hi, Fern.
It's so nice to see you. I can't think of the last time I saw you in the flesh. It's years ago.
I for some reason, I feel like it would have been in my kitchen.
Yeah, I had some very clear memories today in preparation for you arriving of us sat in your front room smoking loads of cigarettes.
Yeah. That was definitely. Yeah. We went for dinner.
We went for dinner
didn't
a few
we?
Times. Went to the pub a few times.
What was that place called?
That was like in my 20s. That was years ago. I'm 40 now, Will.
Yeah, but isn't it good? Someone said to me...
It is.
Oh, I can't, you know, bear getting older. Or what's it like getting older? I was like, I absolutely love it. Very occasionally, I sort of hark back to that time, actually.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, those were the good days, you know. And because I was living... We were in the same neighbourhood, weren't we? And... But actually, I have to remind myself, I was desperately unhappy. So I've got to remind myself, because what I do is I look at pictures and I see the elasticity of my skin.
Oh, don't.
And I'm like,
wow,
man, you were one beautiful, beautiful girl. And then I'm like, you were so unhappy and so dysfunctional. So let's just get that in perspective.
I know, same. I think I'm exactly the same as you. The things I hark back to are merely surface, and they are usually a plump under eye.
You know what? But, I mean, you are speaking words of wisdom are falling out of your mouth.
Plump under eye.
I don't want it so much.
That's the only thing I really miss is the plump under eye. The rest I could give a shit about. Plump under eye.
Oh, my God, I miss a plump under eye so much. Really?
I use that gua sha thing constantly, the little tools that you're meant to rub on your face that are meant to do something. I don't know if it's working, but...
I had filler once.
Did you?
Yeah. But I didn't really like it.
No, I don't know if I can go down that route.
No.
I don't mind.
I don't judge it, but I didn't like it.
I don't judge it. I met these two very lovely girls recently. It was at some sort of podcast seminar. And I think they'd been on Love Island and they were asking me, and they were in their early 20s, and I was talking, it was at the time I was about to turn 40, and they said, have you had any work done on any filler? And I was like, no. And they couldn't believe it. Not because of I looked particularly good, but they couldn't believe that I hadn't succumbed to having filler. And I was like, no, I kind of want to just get all wrinkly and old and go with it.
What's wrong with it?
Nothing.
No, it's only because it's been pushed on us. I have a real problem, actually, as a feminist, when and I get quite angry, I have to stop myself, disgruntled, because I see famous, you know, women come on chat shows and things like that, and the person will say, you look amazing. They go, oh, thank you so much. And I'm like, can't you just do what Sharon Osbourne does and just go, I've got a great surgeon.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I've got a great... I mean, come on.
I know.
You're doing your sisters a huge disservice.
I know, there's so much pressure already.
It's quite damaging.
It is. You know? It is. Let's not pretend that that's just because you drink loads of water and drink wheatgrass.
Otherwise, I wrote an article once about... And I won't say who the person was, but I was in an airport and I saw an advert for a watch, and it was a Hollywood actor... female actor. And I was like, if we went back 200 years and she's in her 50s and someone saw her, she would be in a circus. Like, people would think, she's so youthful.
Yes.
She's a freak. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
It's on the same element as Elephant Man. It's just on the other scale. So I was like, what is going on with the world?
I don't know. I mean, my eye bags are only going to deplete in plumpness over the years, and I'm going with it. Like, whatever. It's all good. And, you know, we're of a similar age, and we've both... And I don't like the word journey, but I don't know what other word to use.
No.
We've both been on a journey of sorts. We're very different people to the people sat in your kitchen smoking cigarettes, put it that
yes.
way. Very different people.
Yes.
And we've gone on our own little discovery of looking at our lives and our weaknesses and our issues and our baggage and all of that stuff.
Mm.
Would you say, I know that this has been long term for you, as it has me, but would you say your 40s have been a good time for self-inventory? Has it felt naturally like the right time?
Well, the 40s, I'm now in kind of like what I like to say functional adult stage, which is where I always wanted to get to. I had an amazing therapist who's no longer alive called Lois Evans, who quite regularly, she was a fabulous New York Jewish lady. First thing she said to me was, if I was your boyfriend, I'd dump you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Second thing she said is, has it ever occurred to you that sometimes you might not be a very nice person? She was amazing.
We're going in with the honesty straight away.
She
from
went,
her,
and that's
right?
what I needed.
Yeah.
I was like, you're incredible. She said, I said, what's the goal? She was like, to get you to functional adult.
Did you know at that point that you weren't acting as a functional adult?
Yeah, I was very unhappy, so I started, but that was because of work. And then quite quickly, I actually got on top of work and went on this amazing course. My tummy just rumbled. I went on this amazing course, Survivors. This guy called Randy Berlin.
Oh, Randy.
He was like from Texas and he looked like he was carved from stone. You know what I mean? He was incredible. And he really sorted... that's when I learned about the beginnings of boundaries. So then work, I was like, oh, okay, kind of enjoying work now. But then I had to deal with like other stuff like childhood trauma, you know, desperate insecurities. Because I was very good at being successful. You know, that was like one of my milieus. I was like head of house, captain of sports, won a competition, like no problem. You know what I mean? It's like 10,000 people, I'll win it.
Yeah.
Fine. It's like, that's how good I was. That's how good my survival mechanism was. No problem. I will high achieve, but I will avoid everything.
Yeah.
So then there was like the beginnings of an unraveling. And then I really unraveled when I moved east. And that was about 8 years ago. So I moved to Hackney. I got an incredible house. Enormous. I mean, like, ostentatiously big, do you know what I mean? And I had a dressing room done up like it was a gentleman's shop from the 1930s, and I was so unhappy. I was like, how can I be unhappy surrounded by so much oak, you know, and brass?
The oak's not going to do it.
No,
it's
but
just
I thought,
not going to do it.
Yeah. So then I got really ill. I mean, I'm surmising here, but you know, I had a breakdown. I got PTSD, mega ill, suicidal, disassociation, the whole lot. And I got through it. I mean, I was like, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to see everyone. I'm going to see shamans. I'm going to see osteopaths. I'm somatic therapy, the lot. Attachment theory. I mean, I literally, I was like, I'm going to study.
Yeah.
I'm literally going to study.
Which you have put in this book, by the way.
Oh. Everything in that book.
I've only got an early copy, so it's not in its proper
bound.
Oh,
that's a shitty one, isn't it?
It's a shitty
Jesus,
one.
You know, they could give you a crap. Jesus Christ, that's on like a child's printer. The worst laminate. It's almost offensive.
But
it's like a script.
I can imagine what it will look like, but that is, you know, put that to one side. It's a brilliant book where you've collated all of this stuff that you've been... that you've been learning and needing, and it has helped you to unravel. And sometimes we use that word unravel in a really derogatory way, like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. And I find it really interesting. And something sort of clicked when you were saying it there, like high achieving is the biggest distraction. And we don't talk about that because
massive.
The model of the modern world, certainly in the West, is if you high achieve, you know, you've made it, it supposedly gives you more self-worth or sense of belonging or whatever. But it can be an empty promise unless backed up with
If you haven't done the inner work, it is going to be empty.
Mm.
You know, you're either one of those people that maybe has quite a stable nervous system, good attachment, you know, I'm like, how wonderful, you know? And that's great. And so then that when you get those things, you see them for what they are. You'll have a good relationship and all those things. But that doesn't tend actually to be the norm.
No.
You know, and I have to watch myself. Like, even coming up this road, I was like, don't be jealous of Fern's house. Don't turn it in on yourself and go, why haven't I got AstroTurf in the back garden? You know, all these things. Because I can do that to myself.
I do it every day.
I can drive past. I'm like, oh, this is a lovely street. Oh, you're not achieving. Mm-hmm. Look what you've done. You know what I mean?
I do it every day.
Yeah, so I have to, like, monitor myself constantly. But it's like being a captain of the ship. Once everything gets more settled, I know how to bring myself back now. And the reason for writing the book, which did start a long time ago, was when I had come out of treatment, I was like, I've read so many books and I need... And there's bits and pieces in each one. You know, in each one. And I thought, well, I need to put it in a guide.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of things we just don't know about. Like, we talk about boundaries. People don't know what boundaries are. We talk about codependency.
Or even mindfulness. Like, what do these words
what's
mean?
Mindfulness?
What does this mean?
What are triggers?
Yeah.
What's trauma? What's you know, all these things. So I thought I'd just put it in a book. Yeah. Well, I'm really pleased with that, actually.
It's so lovely, and it is the sort of book, well, it's an A to Z. You've got all of these different words or subject matters that are either overly complicated in books or overly simplified.
Yeah.
So we don't really know where we're meant to turn. So you've just gone, this is what it all means.
Yeah.
Take what you need from it.
And I talk a lot about from my position because it's how I've experienced it. You know, years ago, I asked a friend of ours that we both know, Gerard Kite, acupuncturist, and I said, I'm doing this talk. I was doing a TED talk, and I was like, what am I going to do? And he was like, all you can do is talk about yourself, you know, share your story from the eye position. And so I've never forgotten that. So I just share it from the eye position and allow people, I can't force people to, like, you know, as much as I'd love to do a talk or write a book and, like, be like, I've changed a million people's life. That's completely out of my hand. All I can do is be like authentic, talk about my story, and if people relate, great.
But the power of storytelling is huge, and we forget that. You know, that's the whole point of the podcast, is people storytelling or us discussing elements of their life and other people then not feeling alone and not feeling isolated, because all the stuff you talk about in the book and all the things that you've been through and the things that I've been through at the time feel unbelievably lonely and isolating.
Yeah.
So to share that it's a beautiful thing.
Well, and it gives people permission.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I find. And also because of where I started, you're not certainly in pop, you know, you're always perfect. You don't talk about anything, you know, real. It's all a complete lie.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always loved turning that on its head anyway, because I just think this is all nonsense.
Mm.
So I love, like, saying, oh my God, I remember when my song charted at 150. You know, and, like, management are like, you don't say those things, you make it into a positive news story. And, like, it's fucking funny. You know, so, like, and I do that with well-being. You know, I talk about it and go, this is shit sometimes. And it gives other people permission. They go, oh, well, maybe if he's talking about it, well, maybe I can.
Yeah, absolutely. Because especially, you know, if we go back to the start of when you came into the public conscious on Pop Idol 20 years ago, which is mind-blowing that it's that long ago, you obviously had stuff that was rumbling on that you weren't aware was affecting you necessarily.
Yeah.
Then you get thrust into, you know, we're talking about the conception of that sort of TV. That didn't exist before Pop Idol in the UK. So this is en masse fame, attention, adoration. You were lumped with everything at once that en masse people assume is the good bit. Oh, my God, you've got this, the dream. You're living the dream. But knowing now what you do and what you were dealing with from your childhood, how did that impact you, all of that, on literally overnight?
It was a distraction to the main event. And again, because I was a high achiever, it was easy. I mean, it really was easy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'll win a competition. Right, now I'll stick around. Yeah, I'll do this. I'll go and do a movie with Stephen Frears and Judy Dench. Easy. I'll go and do a play. You know, I mean, literally, it's like high functioning, high avoiding. Mm. So it really wasn't difficult. It was easy. Mm. And actually, it allowed me to avoid stuff. So I'd obsess about work. But also I was like, I was never felt good enough. You know, oh, if I didn't get on them, oh, you know, looking at other people, constantly comparing myself.
Yeah.
Constantly looking at other people and thinking, oh, they're better than me. You know, they're better. And so I wasn't really enjoying it either, but wasn't really aware. Yeah.
And that's even before social media came into play, that you had those feelings, which is now ubiquitous for most people because we're going, oh, look at them, look up there on their holiday or whatever. This is before that, and you're just doing that.
It was just it was very much with people in the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just didn't feel part of any of it. And I remember years ago, Robbie Williams came round to my flat, and he very, very kind of him, you know. And he knew that I was I was a bit bamboozled by all of this. Oh, what the fuck's this? And he said, I don't think he'd mind me sharing this. And he said his album had just charted at number one. And I think it sold like 210,000 or something in the first week. And he was like, I'm really pissed off because Coldplay sold 220,000 or something like that, you know. And it was so interesting hearing it from him. He was owning it and making light of it, you know. He was like, and I was like, he's Robbie Williams, you know.
Everyone does it.
Everyone does it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get on top of it because you can use it to berate yourself so badly. Like, one of the first things that really helped me, and it's a good CBT technique, is the comparing. If I find myself comparing, I'm like, this is literally a dead-end road.
Yeah.
There is no positive to come out of me comparing. There is no positive for me looking at your gorgeous, I don't think it is wallpaper, but lovely.
It's like
lovely.
Wall.
It's a foam. Yeah. There's material, there's part. I mean, it's delicious.
Mm.
And there's no point me beginning to compare that to my, because I'll either go one up and go,
yeah, I've got a better wall than that.
I've got De Gournay wallpaper. So I think Fern is losing out there. So then I've gone one up and I feel better than you, but it's coming from a place of low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Or I go one down and it's coming from a place of low self-esteem. So the comparison game, full stop, Pierre Melody talks about it. Just don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. So because even if we're using, if I'm using you to push you down to get up, it won't make me feel better.
No. So what keeps your self-esteem in check now? What keeps you feeling okay, confident enough to be able to do the work you're doing?
I've got a few theories. I've got working theories and I'm constantly thinking about them. I think that connection, so something like this. So I did a gig last night. I did a corporate gig. So people don't know, but pop stars do corporate gigs.
Yeah.
For travel agents of the wider area of Birmingham.
Brilliant.
And I asked them all up onto stage. I started a conga where only two people joined me around the room. And I realised after 2 minutes there were only two people joining me. And even the second one was lagging behind, to be honest, because she had she had a stick. And I didn't get back till... But that's a true story, by the way. And then I went exited through the wrong door and went to the kitchens in the hotel. But I didn't get back till two. I didn't sleep great. You know, I wake up feeling a bit groggy. I'm a bit emotional. I'm like, oh, I'm feeling a bit wobbly. But I know that doing this chat, I'll feel lovely.
Yeah.
Because I'm talking, I'm sharing in a safe space, open vulnerability. So those kind of things, connection.
Yeah.
we all need to connect. I mean, Johan Hari talks about it amazingly, and I think he's really right. I also think that if we feel loved, we feel better. What I've tried to do is, through therapy, is get that muscle memory of feeling loved. And even as I tune into it now, it's like, suddenly I notice, oh, my confidence goes up. Oh, I feel a bit more present. So it's really actually quite simple. It's just very difficult to get there.
And this is feeling loved by, obviously, comparing who you are today to who you were back in the day. Same with me. I would certainly reach for exterior, it's not even love, but attention or whatever, mistaking that for true connection and love with people that matter. A small circle of people where you feel part of something.
Yeah, and we go through friendships with people that are not necessarily the right people. You know, you think, oh, we'll do that. Yeah, all those kind of things. There is actually, I do validate, you know, like, I love attention as well. Like, I completely validate it. I love it. Mm. It's why I'm a bloody performer.
Yeah.
I relish it. Mm. I'm like a monster, you know. But, like, I keep it in its position. I know it's not going to, like, spiritually fulfil me and nurture me.
What about the other side of that? Because it's such a double-edged sword with, there's nothing wrong, as you just said, with wanting attention, with liking en masse adoration. I'm sure that most musicians, actors, stage actors, obviously get a kick from that. You've got an audience you're interacting with and you can see them and you can feel their energy.
Yeah.
But of course, especially now with the addition of social media, when that turns the other way and and people either turn on you or there's, you know,
something
sort of revolt against you, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's a crisis.
How do you deal with that?
Well,
because I don't feel like I'm built for this industry a lot.
I'm completely not built for this. No,
I don't know how to deal with it.
No, I feel the same. I'm really not.
And because, I feel embarrassed saying that because people go, oh, fuck off. You do a lovely job that you love. Yes, I do, but I don't feel thick-skinned enough to deal with it.
As an observer, what I have noticed that I think you've done is you've created a space like this where it's kind of straight to market, if that makes sense. There's no, like, people going, yes, we want you, yes, we don't.
Yeah.
It's the best thing.
I can't deal with that.
No,
that's why
I can't
do this.
Spare it.
I can't do it.
You know, it's democratic.
I don't want to be rejected.
No, I mean, I got dropped yesterday from doing Joe Wiley's show on Radio 2. And, you know, it took me, like, and I was thinking as I was coming over, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to talk about that because people don't talk about it. That's another thing people don't talk about. It's like, everything's fine. You know, I was really upset. I do a really good job on that show.
Yeah.
And it took me about 4 hours to be like, this was the process, get dropped. And I was like, motherfucker. You know, and then I'm like, how am I coping with this? I think I'm all right. And then it comes. Then the feelings, I was like, it's all going wrong now. I was like, I'm not even going to, I mean, what am I going to do when I'm 60? I literally go there.
Go to that, I do the same.
You know what I mean? I'm like, what am I going to do when I'm 60? It just goes on. And then I'm annoyed at myself because I'm feeling really uncomfortable feelings. So I'm kind of observing the whole thing.
That's the key, though.
I'm observing it. I'm trying not to judge myself because I'm not great with uncomfortable feelings. Because
no
I wasn't
is.
When I was young.
No. Yes.
You know, my nervous system isn't great with it. It makes me very quickly anxious. But after about 4 hours, I was like, you know what? You're a great broadcaster. I had to talk it through with a couple of people. I had to try and not be angry at the person that made the decision. That's difficult because that's a really easy distraction to go, what a horrible person. You know, it's like, it's out of my control. Today I'm like pretty zen about it.
That's a quick process.
It's a quick process. But if that was years ago, I wouldn't be. I tell you what I struggle with. I do really struggle with music. It just seems, for some reason, pop. Even when I came in, Jesse said to me, are you still doing music? And I was like, oh my God.
Oh, thanks, Jesse.
He asked me if I'm still doing music. You know, it's a little, I mean, like, you know, it's like saying to actors.
Jesse listens to music exclusively from the 70s,
no,
by
but
the
it's
way.
Like
so
saying,
just
but,
to
but,
put but that out there.
Yeah,
disclaimer.
But those things, you know, I get it a lot because.
I get it.
You know,
I get
like,
it all the time.
I get it from cabs, cab drivers, you know, people on the street. And I, the way I deal with it is I laugh. And I talk about it like it now because it is funny. But it, of course it's going to hit me because I'm like, oh,
yeah,
that's my business. That's my main earner. If you know, if he doesn't know I'm doing music and then I feel hope, you know. So I just kind of, you got to laugh about it. But I know I'm not built for pop. I'm so thin skinned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not great with rejection.
No.
I know all the, listen, I've read Brené Brown, you know. But like, it doesn't mean that I'm walking through life as some like Zen master. But I think that's why you need to connect because we can laugh at And I use this, by the way, with huge generosity towards myself, my own craziness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because people, someone got cross with me once, they were like, you used the word crazy. And I completely validated it. I was like, you know, I'm really sorry you're upset. I will continue to use that word about myself. But I laugh about it because it's funny.
It is. And this is...
My thinking is so nuts sometimes.
I know. But this is what I love and encourage within this conversation, whether it's about well-being or parts of mental health, that discussion, or spirituality, is we need to have fun to get through a lot of this stuff and talk about the unfavourable. I'm exactly the same. I've talked endlessly on different platforms about the fact that I've been sacked from I don't know how many TV shows. Nobody asks me to do telly anymore. I don't get asked. And I had a couple of Christmases ago, when I was doing Top of the Pops, I had the lighting guy went, because I've worked with him since I was maybe 15.
Yeah, you know everyone.
And he went, do you still do telly? Oh, what do you do these days? And I was like,
doesn't it make you...
I run a whole business and I work really hard every
but
day.
But don't you feel like you're falling off a cliff when that happens?
Yes, it's horrible. And then I start to go, I'm not confident enough to be on camera today. I can't stand up. Oh, the person I'm presenting with is way more popular than me. I can't do this. And you spiral. Yes. And this might all sound surface and pathetic, but this is it. We've got to talk about this stuff. Because I think on whatever level, rejection of any kind feels ugly.
You know, for me, it actually, I got to a stage when I was like, I know how privileged I am. I know how lucky I am. But also... life's life, you know?
Yeah.
So people get rejected in work and everyone has different types of work scenarios, but it is work. And those kind of comments, you know, actually, you know, they are difficult comments. It doesn't matter how much work you've done. It doesn't matter how much journaling you do. You know, it's still going to be... It's really making me laugh talking about this because it is so funny because it's so awful when it happens.
It is, well, but also because
I love that. Love that. I loved it when you did Fame Academy, Will. And I'm like, oh, they don't even know the programme I was on.
People call me Holly all the time.
Oh, God, don't. Someone said to me once, an estate agent, and by the way, I had a compass. Don't ask me why in my back pocket. I wanted to stab she said this. Didn't you used to be Will Young?
What does that even mean?
Well,
I can't bear it.
Yeah, I couldn't bear it. And I think I just said yes.
I'm really on it. I've got lots of stories on this one.
It's so
when
funny.
We moved house, the new postman came to the door and I opened the door and then his face dropped and I went, oh, and he went, I was told Fern Britton lived here.
Oh, God,
and
yeah, I went, that, yeah.
Oh, it's the wrong. It's different. I'm a different fan. Yeah. And then again, all those feelings start. But it's a.
So how do you? For me, it varies day to day. How do you get on top of that?
Well, like you, I feel devastated in the moment because sometimes my identity is so formed by others that I forget I've got my own one outside of all this nonsense.
Yeah.
But also, I have worked really hard in the last 5 years to build my own little world that. No one else, I can't get sacked from doing this.
Yeah, great.
I mean, people can stop listening, fine. Well and done. I will deal with that when that might happen. And, you know, I'm getting older, so I've definitely got less of a need to be out in the forefront of it all. I'm quite happy doing things in a slightly quieter way. Mm. And also, I really like my free time. So I'm probably a bit better now at going, it doesn't matter that I'm not constantly asked to do things, to go to things, to award things, or things I don't really ever care about.
Yeah.
Because I like being at home pottering about. I'm a homebody.
No, and they're hideous, those award shows.
They're awful.
Oh, why do I say yes to them? Because when I get there, I'm like, oh my God, I'm hating this.
I
used to, when I used to go to the Brits, people stopped lending me clothes because I used to delay my departure so I'd miss the red carpet. So Burberry stopped giving me clothes because I never got photographed.
I don't even get invited anymore.
No.
I haven't been invited for years. As soon as I left Radio 1, it was like, she ceases to exist.
But isn't there also quite a nice... Because, listen, it's all nonsense.
Of course it is.
The whole thing's nonsense.
Of course, it's a big game.
And so... If we can realise that, we will come back always to realising it. And it's something that numerous brilliant people that I help with my well-being, my physical health, tell me. The more you come back to it, the quicker you'll come back to it.
Yeah.
So I know it's nonsense. And if I'm sitting in my car as I'm driving up to entertain travel agents of the wider Birmingham area, saying to myself, it's okay, everything will be fine, having been sacked, you know... it takes me 4 hours rather than 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and plus included in that 4 weeks is completely acting out, drinking too much, you name it, love addiction, shopping, sex, ruminating about exes, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
So that's all gone.
You know. But that's
so we
remarkable.
Have to remember that, you know. We
that's
have to remember
remarkable.
That. Yeah.
As the day winds down, don't let allergies disrupt your night. At Aspire Allergy and Sinus, we're here to bring you peace and relief. Our expert team offers personalized allergy testing and advanced treatments, so you can enjoy restful nights free from the struggles of congestion and discomfort. Make the evenings yours again. Visit AspireAllergy.com to schedule an appointment and experience a life where every breath is serene. Breathe easy. Sleep better. Aspire Allergy, your pathway to peaceful nights and brighter mornings. AspireAllergy.com.
To talk about the period that you touched on very lightly at the beginning, having a breakdown, we can look at these periods and go, if I look back at my own time that was very dark mentally, we can sort of converse about that or imbibe that sort of story going, oh God, how terrible. But actually, it's the birth of something entirely different, because if you want to get out of it, you have to make change. There's no other way. You have to make change. No. You have to do things differently. You have to get quite quiet and quite humble and see it all. And it's hard. It's not an easy process to go through, but that's what you've been through. And that's what.
Yeah.
But to look at that, the period of, let's call it that conception of, like, you needed a new world and new thinking. You had all these different manifestations within this breakdown from what I've read in your book.
Mm.
One of them, I had never heard of it. And this is why I like doing this podcast, because I'm constantly learning things, language, points of view, perspectives, and I didn't know about a disassociation which leads to you not recognising your own face. Mm. I'd never heard of this.
So, no, I mean, I always thought it was just if you took E. But,
seems not.
Yeah.
So tell me about this.
I mean, so disassociation, I had to, you know, that's in the book, and I've started a podcast, my very humble podcast, by the way.
Well, no, brilliant podcast.
And, you know, I had to diagnose myself, and even a top psychiatrist wasn't doing it. So that was, like, difficult. But dissociation is a symptom from heightened anxiety, when basically a part of our brain will shut off to protect us. So Livingston, when he got attacked by a lion, he speaks about it, and he doesn't remember. He's like, I watched myself. You know, it's the ultimate protective mechanism of our bodies. And we do it in our day-to-day lives. Like, if I drive home, I might sort of get home and think, God, I don't remember that journey.
Yeah, of course.
Because we kind of don't need to. The problem is when it fires up and it takes you offline and it's like, oh, I'm an adult and I need to do things. And literally one day, I suddenly didn't know who I was in the mirror. If I'd met you, I wouldn't have known you with any emotional context. So now I'm talking to you and I have sort of nice images and emotional recollections of you and my kitchen and and us sitting in the sitting room and having a giggle. And no, it would be, it's like being a ghost. So dissociation, I had depersonalization, which is not recognizing myself, not recognizing places with any emotional context, thinking that I was in a film and that everyone was in a film. And it can lead, luckily I didn't have this, to complete existential angst. There's also derealization, which is you can't really get a perspective on your body, different to body dysmorphia. People can get it, also young males can get it, often if they take drugs. So, like, between late teens, early 20s, it's very common. But what's interesting is I actually know some people that have dissociation who I know really well, but they never told me.
This is always the thing when you start talking about it.
They didn't know about it. So I do bang on a lot about it, because actually lots of people have it. I still get it, but it's really so much better. You know, I still get it, but it's not like it was.
So when you were first experiencing this, and I'm sure you didn't have a clue what was going on at the time, what was the process to try and dilute that process and to get you back on track?
I honestly would say those 2 years were the worst, because I also got thrown on a lot of medications. I was misdiagnosed. I knew it was a misdiagnosis, but I was trying everything.
Yeah.
And I was trying to work. I was in the West End, you know, and I don't think the medication actually helped. So it was just a nightmare. And really, it was 2 years of hell. I wouldn't wish it. I honestly, even people that I really dislike, I wouldn't wish it on them even.
Yeah, God.
It's like being
terrifying.
A ghost. There are some good books, and in my book I have references to that, kind of workbooks that help. You have to start slowly, very gently, just noticing various things. Smells really help. Sounds, touch. Just notice 5 things in the room and really build on it slowly. But, you know, what came from that was agoraphobia. You know, I couldn't walk my dog around the square. You know, it was... I got better if I had a session of therapy when I went into treatment, but then it would last for about an hour. And then it comes back, and that's very common. But, you know, I've had people get in touch because of me talking about it, who I've then put them in touch with people, and I've watched them get better.
Mm.
You know, there's one person, and his mum got in touch from an interview I did years ago, and I spoke to him. We have a lot of similarities, actually. And I was like, if you need to get better, you need to do this. If you're not going to do this, you're not going to get better. And he's got better.
Wow.
I'm so proud of him.
That's
he's
so
left
wonderful.
University now.
That's so brilliant. Yeah. But it's so hopeful for people to hear those stories, because in the thick of something like that, you do feel hopeless and like, I'm stuck with this forever, and how will I ever be like I used to? I used to harp back to, I wish I was normal like I used to be.
Yeah, I know, I get that.
Which
I
is a
that.
Terrible thing to say, because you're instantly dead-ending yourself. Like, well, wait, what about me turning into the new version of who I am and where I'm headed next?
But also, I'm thinking of something I heard you say earlier, which is that was all surface, you know?
Mm.
And
I'm quick to judge myself because I'm second-guessing what my listeners probably won't think but could. I'm waiting for that one person to go, who the fuck do you think you are complaining about life?
But you know what? I'm fine with that.
Oh,
like,
you see, I'm
I'm like, yeah. You know what actually turned it around for me with that was, okay, it's one of my sort of strengths. Other things, you know, not so good. But it was codependency and learning about codependency and boundaries.
I'm bad with boundaries still. I'm so bad with them.
I'm obsessed with them.
Right, so how are you implementing them? I need to learn. This is a place for me to learn. How are you implementing boundaries?
I'll give you an example. But, you know, I really put this down, one, to my therapist, Lois, who was, she was the queen of boundaries. Yeah, I think probably her and maybe reading, like, maybe Peer Melody. Have you interviewed?
No.
Oh, my God, she'll totally come on your podcast.
Oh, will she? Okay, right, I need a contact.
Are you joking?
Oh,
you're massive.
Okay,
you've got to get Peer Melody.
Okay, that's happening.
I'm nerdily, like, obsessed with her.
Well, we'll follow this up.
She's hardcore.
Right, okay.
If you do it, can you just FaceTime me and put me in, like, put me in the plant?
A free session.
It? Yeah, put me in the plant. Okay, here's an example. So my pipe bursts.
Right.
In the back garden. Not pleasant. I get it sorted. My next door neighbour pipe, a few weeks later, it bursts. Knock on the door. She comes around. By the way, I love her. So she listens to a podcast. I love you.
We're all good.
And she's in a panic. And she goes, what are we going to do about it? And I said, I'm going to stop you there and make a vulnerable request, which is that you use the I position. I said, because there is no we in this. You have your drain. I have my drain. And she sort of stopped. But then she calmed down. I mean, obviously, she'd never heard anyone speak in such ridiculous therapy speaking in her life. She was like, who is this man? But I was like, I'm not getting involved. I'm not suddenly getting dragged into a wee panic situation.
Oh.
I'm quite calm.
I'm constantly dragged into wees, and I go with it all the time.
Because I think the ultimate thing is I don't want to offend people, and I don't want people to feel bad about me. But with codependency as well, I learned that I have no control over making people feel... In fact, if I'm trying to control what people think about me, I'm, one, manipulating them.
Yeah.
Two, I'll just come away feeling really angry and passive-aggressive, so it's going to make me ill. Do you know what I mean? So why not do something about it? I did a gig the other day, and Boy George was singing at it. Boy George was horrible about me years ago. So I was like, brilliant. Got to get this done. So I told his manager, because he wasn't there. You know, our paths didn't cross. And I was so happy.
So what?
He said, have you met George? And I said, you know, I'm feeling really nervous about seeing him because he was really horrible about me.
Yeah.
And he told him and I got it off my list.
Great.
I was so happy. And also, I have some stuff I need to own up for certain people, so I need to do that.
We all do.
Yeah,
I've got that, and
I've got to do it. But you know, It's not in my power, and it's not for me to manipulate other people to feel good about me the whole time. And also, because then I'm like, we might as well just, I might as well be a feather in the wind. Yes, don't worry, Emily, I'll come and shovel the shit out of your drain. let me just get my pond creepers on so I can get down there. Do you know what I mean?
I know, I'm laughing it's because really I do it every day. I honestly do. I feel a responsibility in a sense, even when I'm doing the podcast, that I want the guests to feel relaxed. I want them to feel like I really understand them or that I'm giving them the space. But I take it into every nook and cranny of my life, to my detriment, usually.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, because it makes us ill.
It does.
It's not an easy thing to do because we're not taught it.
No.
And also, but there's a brilliant guest, and I can't remember her name, but it's on the first episode of my podcast, and she's written a brilliant book. I think it's called The Joys of Being Selfish.
I've got it.
Have you interviewed her?
No, but I've got the book. It's by Michelle Elman. Does my eyesight's terrible.
Okay, she knows her shit.
Really? Okay.
She knows her shit.
Let's get her on as well.
She's hardcore. Because I was like, oh, wow, okay, you're hardcore.
Okay, I need to do that because I can almost go to martyr, which is, I'm not saying that with any pride.
No.
I can be a right martyr and be like, look how amazing I'm being to everyone, but I'm bottom of the pile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's shitty. It's not good.
Shit, because we're like, also, I'm not being authentic to people and honest to my friends. You know, I'm not.
I do it to my husband. I'll go, you've just been away for 3 days and I've put everything above myself, you know, I've made everything a priority. And it's like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this?
I mean, I would say relationships, it's hard, man. And, you know, I know you guys love each other, but, you know, it's a adult relationship world.
It's complex.
I think that is a really difficult thing. But it is, there are little hacks that we can do. I think talking from the I position is mega. I'll give you another example.
Because that's taking responsibility and you're accountable. Is that why it's important?
It's because I'm owning my stuff. Yeah, basically. Ooh. And what I'm learning is that when I first started therapy, when I said I thought I was being selfish.
Yeah, I'm probably still in that headspace.
You know what I mean? I used to think, God, who do you think you are? Just talking about me the whole time. And I was doing cabaret, the musical, and people would talk at the beginning. And it was very difficult for me to hear the music. So I was like, I'm learning boundaries. I'm going to practice this. Maybe it wasn't the best thing. But anyway, the lesson was great. So I stood up in front of the company and thought, listen, I've said this about 5 times to the company manager. No one's listening. So I was like, I'm going to do it. And I said, this is what happens. This is how I feel about it. This is what I would prefer. Someone came. She's a friend of mine. It triggered her. She came into my dressing room and she was like, I can't believe it wasn't shaming me, but she was like, you know, I just feel like, you know, I've done everything wrong. And she kept on saying we. And, you know, we. And I was like, I've got to stop you there, because if it's a we situation, we're going to have a conversation with the whole company. But the whole company aren't in my dressing room. It's just you. And she did it a couple of times. She was like, yeah, but the thing is, you know, we were talking. And I said, I'm going to have to bring you back again to the I position, because these people aren't here. Because suddenly I then feel ganged up on.
Of course.
But they're not in the room. and then it came out. And she was like, I used to get scolded and feel very ashamed as a child. And I was like, totally get it.
Yeah.
Totally get it. We're great friends.
But you've got to be courageous to do that.
You've got
to be. I'm a wimp sometimes. And I go, I'm just going to be passive aggressive instead.
I bet you're not with your kids, though.
No, I'm not. I'm not with
your kids.
You've
got to treat people like kids.
Yeah, I guess so.
Literally, like, my neighbour was like, what? you got to treat people.
Yeah, I get it.
Like kids.
I get it. Look, I also really desperately on a personal level want to talk to you about your nervous system, because I feel like I still am not in a great place. Like this week my anxiety has been quite bad for myriad reasons I don't need to bore anyone with, but lots of physically stored anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
And I tested myself yesterday and I don't like driving on the motorway. I get
a
huge panic attack things going on. I left it 5 years at one point, which was not a great idea. But recently I've been chipping away at it.
But you used to unicycle on the motorways instead, didn't you?
I used to do all sorts on the motorway. I could do it all, handstands, whatever. So again, you know, I wish I was like my old normal self.
Yeah.
You could drive on the motorway.
Yeah, I get that.
But anyway, I went yesterday and I drove to Henley, which is an hour away, and back, and I did it. And it was tough at times, but I did it and it was great. But I can, mine is all in my chest. Yeah. I can feel it here. It's like it's alive. It's electric.
Me too.
Oh. Worms moving. It's just, I can feel it all here. And I'm constantly looking for new things to do. I'll do cold water therapy, yoga, running, walking barefoot. I'll do bloody anything to help. And you say in the book that most days your main goal is to feel balanced physically. Like, that's your goal, is to wake up and go, how today will I feel physically okay and not in panic? So tell me a bit about this.
I mean, I really, really relate to what you're saying. So first of all, thank you, because I don't meet many people that are so aware of their body in that way. And I have that. I feel it mostly in my chest.
Yeah.
It's absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And if the body isn't settled, you know, to be honest, if the body's calm, everything else is kind of a breeze.
Yeah.
It just doesn't stay with me. You know, I might go and have acupuncture and then I'm walking around. I literally feel like I'm in The Sound of Music. I'm like, hello, children. Hello, traffic warden. I don't give a shit. You know, I got fired from another job and it's really weird times at the moment. It must be the moon.
The bloody moon.
And I just had acupuncture. So I was like, doesn't matter, you know, but it doesn't stay. So, okay. So I used to love being in the car. I find it really difficult. When I got ill, for some reason, I then really noticed it in my body. So what I noticed was that when my body is feeling agitated and anxious, you know, life is a lot harder. So I try and have a toolkit that I use to sort it out. I love lying on the floor on my back. It really helps. My body reacts so well. You know, I stop drinking, so that really helps.
So you're completely sober now?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it's just like, I just feel better.
Yeah.
And I've lost weight and it's nice. You know what I mean? And I'm not eating crap food. I go and have acupuncture. I have massages. I've got like foam rollers.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
Have you got the spiky mat that you lie on?
Yes, yeah. I've got them all.
I haven't used it yet, but I've got one.
Machine. That doesn't work, but it worked for a bit.
A machine.
That was 400 quid. But, you know, I've got infrared. But, you know, my thing is like, they all work to a degree. So we just need different toolboxes. Mm. Quite often, my body will settle. If I had the most consistent thing, it would be doing this, connecting.
Chatting.
Mm. Actually.
I think it's probably the same for me.
Yeah, connecting with someone who I feel safe with.
Mm.
And really taking inventory of people I don't feel safe around.
Yeah.
Because actually,
I've got people that make me feel on such high alert, I can feel the cortisol going up my neck.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think, why is it? Because they're not saying anything mean, or there's not even a power play. I just feel like, I don't know how to be around you. I don't know how to be me and feel okay. I can't even describe it. It's very strange.
You might be, I mean, one, you might be picking up
their shit.
Yeah. Because if you're sensitive.
Very.
And people talk about empaths and things like that. But I can find myself in someone's place within a second. I'm like, hang on, why am I? I was suddenly like, what are they going to do? I'm like, well, I'm not in that position.
Yeah.
You know? But also, what's amazing about our bodies, but what we don't realise is, you know, we're fight and flight animals. So we will pick up on other people's energies. One of the amazing things that I learned is if someone's presenting something to me, but my body's getting something else, it fries my system. So if I'm seeing someone and they're smiling at me and going, but my body's like, get the fuck out of here.
Oh, I know.
I'm like,
I can think of the people. Yeah, I know this.
But I listen to that now.
Oh, God, I need to listen to it.
I met someone 2 days ago. He was deadly handsome. So I gave him 5 seconds.
Of course.
But, you know, he walked out of his door. And I was thinking about it yesterday. And I was like, couldn't cope with the energy.
Yes.
Wasn't judging him. I was like, I can't cope with this fucking, I don't know what's going on.
Isn't it amazing? And we ignore that in day-to-day life.
We think,
what did they say to me? You know, and it's like, no, how do they make you feel? We are all made of energy. There's energy all around us and it's interacting and we ignore it.
Yeah. And also remember, it is energy. So like, you can get out of things by using energy. Rattles. I've got a lot of rattles.
Yeah, love.
I love a rattle. Smells.
And clapping.
Clapping's great.
Clapping around a room. I do it with my kids. I haven't slept well at night. I'm like clapping in their room, getting that energy moving.
Yeah.
moved on.
And it, well, people notice if we would have had an argument, if someone came in, they'd notice. So that's energy. The problem is that we just think it's all a bit weird, but actually it's complete science.
Completely.
But I've learned so much about the nervous system. I mean, I try and be empathetic to my nervous system, but, you know, kind of hate it most of the time.
Yeah,
you know,
I can go into self-loathing very quickly.
Oh, I really
about
that. Because I feel like I'm attacking myself.
Yes. Or I feel like I'm failing. Why can't I cope with this? It's pathetic. Yeah. And I'm in a whole spiral then.
But, you know, our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems, you know, my parasympathetic, which is what calm is meant to sort of shoot in when I have a panic and calm me down, isn't brilliant. Mm. But actually, when I think back to the past, and it's so lovely to hear you talk about that because I've never really related to someone on this level, and I think, God, why can't it be back to them? I think it was always there.
Of course.
It's just that I was using behaviours to avoid it.
We were drinking, smoking, and working loads.
You know,
and
exactly. Love addiction, yeah. Fantasising.
Yeah.
You know, so I think actually it was kind of always there.
That's what's interesting is actually sometimes we think, oh, God, I'm regressing and I'm going backwards. I'm not moving forward and healing. But actually, this is all an uncovering of the stuff we're meant to see, meant to deal with, meant to poke around in. And we spend years going, put that on top of it. I don't want to look there.
No,
and this
of course.
Is just clearing the shit.
Yeah, and why would you want to go there? But you know, like, I have to remind myself, I'm like, why am I getting activated driving in my car? But then I'm like, if your hypervigilance is up and the radar's up, who wants to drive a bloody... And I've got this sort of ridiculously enormous Jeep. I love it. I literally love it more than my family. You know, I'm like, of course you're going to be... You're on a road going 70 miles an hour in a ton car. So I have to constantly remind myself it's not my fault. Mm. But there are also... There's a great book. It's become very popular in the last 2 years. You know, it's a difficult read, but The Body Keeps the Score.
I've got that somewhere as well. I haven't read it yet.
I mean, it's not an easy read.
No, I bet
it's not. Just get a premise from it.
Right, okay.
Get a summary on Google. Yeah. But, you know, treat the body, not the mind. Do the mind as well, but really I go for the body now. Mm. Equine therapy.
So talk to me about this. Equine therapy.
Amazing. You go in with the horse and it's like a mirror. In fact, it's more like a prism. And I interviewed this guy in Richmond Park.
Oh, I'm down the bloody road.
No, he's amazing. I thought I was going to not get on with him at all because he was wearing jodhpurs. But actually, because I'm really forgiving like that. You know, I thought I'm so good. I thought I was going to be some posh idiot. And he's not. He's actually a right old laugh.
Wow.
And it's very difficult to explain, but it's amazing with boundaries. And what they do is they kind of... They calm the nervous system down because horses have to be calm to then be able to react when they need to. Mm. They're flight animals. We need to be calm so we can react. And there's something very special, but it goes straight to the body.
Wow. Again. Yeah, because it's not a cognitive thought, like what's happening here. No. You're feeling something.
I remember years ago, like,
that's beautiful.
Gerard Kite, the acupuncturist, saying, "We are not our thoughts." And I was like, "Gerard, I think you've done too much therapy," you know. But we're not.
No.
But we really need to check in with how we feel when our body's calm. Check in with that. And it will be my lifelong thing to try and keep on coming back to it.
Yeah,
you know,
same.
It's not easy. And it's not easy. My heart goes out to anyone that has a nervous system that is jumpy. Anyone. But it's nice to talk about it. It's so brilliant that you talk about it because you won't be the only one.
No.
Just try not to get caught up in the nonsense of the head.
Yeah.
That's what I say to people. You know, whenever people come to me, the first thing I say is, you need to go and have some body therapy, acupuncture. It still amazes me how many people don't know about, like, osteopathy.
Yeah.
Or even a massage.
Yeah.
Like, you need to go.
The massage thing's interesting because people now assume it's some sort of lavish luxury that you go and have this pampering thing. And it's like, this is someone physically moving tension out of your body and getting it out of you so you don't have to deal with it with being angry at someone or whatever it might be. I mean, I don't do it enough and I need to, but I've certainly felt the power of it. Say, when I've done a breathwork session where I've got this memory of this one breathwork session I did with this amazing lady. She's been on the podcast, called Rebecca Dennis. And we were doing this very specific technique that she works with. And I was feeling the usual sort of tingling and stuff. And then she pushed my hips and knees together and I bawled my eyes out. And it was something, it wasn't even a cognitive thought. I had a feeling it was to do with giving birth and when I'd given birth to my children. And it was something that I needed to get out of my system that was still there because it was hips coming
like
back together.
Like a stored trauma.
Yeah. And I wailed. And, wow. You know, when I think back to my births, they weren't traumatic. They were really beautiful. And obviously they're very intense, but it was beautiful. But she moved something on. And, you know, you saying this is really hitting home because I don't honour that enough.
Yeah.
I think I've really got to talk this out with Jessie, or I've really got to work out why I feel like this. And it's like, this is, especially with my nervous system. And, you know, my mum came on the podcast the other day for Mother's Day.
Amazing.
And
I think I've met your mother, but I don't know why.
Yeah, my mum is a character. She's brilliant. But her nervous system is like fireworks. And she knows it. And it's all from her dad and some of the stuff from her mum. And we talked about it a lot. And we have really similar reactions to things. And like sort of sleep anxiety and how that fires up. And again, I don't think myself or my mum have honoured the physical bit. Well, what am I doing to get that out of me rather than, oh, I better talk to someone about this.
No,
maybe I need to really think about why I had that angry reaction. It's like, this shit's in my body.
Yeah, but can I say and really validate that the physical reaction of what the brain is doing when our nervous system, you know, our brain is a problem-solving tool. So nervous system triggered, frontal lobes going into like, how am I going to solve this? There's obviously a problem. And then it just gets diverted. So, like, for example, I used to be like, well, clearly I can't be in this house. Or at least I'm changing the paint scheme immediately. Do you know what I mean? Like, obsessed about paint schemes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so that would be my brain going, well, that's obviously what's wrong. It's a problem-solving tool and it's very good. But when the body's doing that, of course our mind, we are really caught in the whole thing because it's real.
Mm.
The key thing to do is there's lots of little hacks. Like, I go everywhere with the little stretchy bands because they get me in my body very quickly. You know, like, you have different coloured bands, you know.
Yep.
You can, like, I go everywhere with little roly balls because that's, you know, I've learned all these little tricks from different...
That's lovely.
Because I need to get in my body and it does it very quickly for me. Coming here in the car, I know I'm not great travelling, so I listen to... years ago, I saw a hypnotist, so I listened to 20 minutes of her, you know, talking.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, I'm feeling all right. Try and calm down first and then see what your mind's saying. So use it as a little test. That's what I say to people. Just use it as a test. Hold off for an hour. I mean, I find the breathing impossible. I mean, I really resist the breathing.
Yeah.
Because I've got such a thing in my chest.
I have the
same. I feel
same.
Like I'm in the electric
And it's also
chair.
Hard work. So, you know, Rebecca's a great friend of mine and she'll say, should we do a session soon? Like, oh, I'm really busy at the moment. Because I find it like running a marathon and I know it's going to be full on. And I think, I can't be arsed. I'd rather go for a walk. But it's the best thing I could do.
Yeah.
I just don't do it enough. It's full on.
It's full on. If that's all. I've got so, you know, when you've got that trapped energy. And I find yoga hard because it's not, there's a lot of resistance.
That one works for me. I just... My brain stops. Same with cold water swimming. I'm big into at the moment.
That's great.
Because you can't think. All you're doing is going, oh, my fucking God. You're just
Where'd
breathing.
Where'd you do it?
In the sea. Yesterday I went to my friend's ice bath. I'll do it anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, love. Absolutely love. But again, I need to do these things really often because it will last a few hours and then I'm back to, oh my God, my cortisol and I'm stressed and I'm overwhelmed and I can't deal with this. And
that's the thing. It needs to be... It takes the body such a long time to know that we can do it with ourselves. We do need help. But I did like something the other day, and I think that's because I've been working on it a long time and maybe going pretty much off medication now. My body can accept it more. I recognise that medication has a place, by the way, so... Don't sue me, anyone.
They've got enough money, quite frankly.
It would really upset me. No, come on. And I did something. It was restorative, like strength, kind of like yoga. And my body like came back quite quickly from a really triggered state in about 20 minutes.
Wow.
I was like, wow, that's interesting. So we just have to like persist.
Remind it again and again.
But like, okay, so 4 hours from cold water swimming. Cool, that's 4 hours, and then I'm going to have to do something else.
Yeah.
You know, like, connect with someone.
Yeah.
Do some yoga. Do, you know what I mean?
Go for a walk. Yeah. Walking is a big one for me again.
It's got to be, it's the upkeep.
Yeah.
It's the upkeep.
But it's so nice and empowering for anyone listening to this and for me to, because I have to be reminded of this shit constantly. You know, this is all I do now for work is read this stuff, talk about this stuff, but I still forget all of it and then spiral off out of control.
Of course.
But the most empowering thing is it hasn't got to be some far-fetched retreat or expensive thing. This is carrying a band around or some balls around with you.
Tennis balls. Yeah, I just have two tennis balls.
Yeah, this is simple shit.
I roll my feet on tennis balls. Because it's like mini reflexology.
Yeah.
Our feet take a lot of weight, you know, and it's amazing. Mm. How do you feel? Can I ask you, like, do you miss, like, if you look back on, like, what, when you were doing loads of TV and radio and things, like, do you miss it? Is there still a,
probably
yeah, how
bits.
Is that?
Like, I feel a frustration that I don't feel I could do live radio at the moment because my nervous system could not handle it. I would not sleep the night before. I'd have a panic attack before. I'd probably be fine when I was on air. It's the bit before that I just can't get myself through with ease. So I feel a level of frustration, like, I know I can do that job really well. Yeah. And it's a skill that I've learned for 25 years and I can't do it. And I feel frustrated about that. I don't miss TV so much because I haven't found a TV as yet where I could do this, where I could go to the level of, we're cutting out all the bullshit. No one's going to edit this bit out. Yeah, no one's going to say, oh, that probably won't go down well with whatever. You know, I haven't found a place on TV where I can do that. Radio I loved because it was freer and it was just about music a lot of the time. Yeah, and it was really beautiful. And I liked the technical side of it. So I feel frustrated that I can't put myself in that position. I don't mean not to do about it because sometimes I think, oh, should I give it a go again? And then I just think, I know I won't sleep the night before. I don't want to do that to myself.
Your body's not ready for it.
It's not ready. I'm at the place still where I feel I'll never be ready, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But I'm open to change and things happening. But at the moment, I feel like, how would I ever go into that feeling physically safe? I can't see it being a reality. No. I feel completely like doing this.
Yeah.
There's zero stress in my body. Yeah. I'm really happy. I feel, you know, enriched from having these conversations. Similarly, if I'm writing or doing the Happy Place Festival, all those things, I luckily don't have any physical reaction to it, apart from this feels great.
Yeah.
And it's the opposite when I put myself in that situation. So
that's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, I really relate to that. You know, there are times when I'm like, come on, do it. And then I sort of sit back and I think, well, is my nervous system telling me something? Like, where am I really content? I'm mostly content doing stuff like this.
Yeah, exactly. It's the constant question of how much do I push myself out of my comfort zone?
Exactly.
Like, is it worth it? Because I do like to push myself and challenge myself, but is it worth it to the point where I'm taking beta blockers because I can't sleep? I don't think so.
So it's really, such an interesting quandary, but I think sometimes when we really listen to our body and just go, so it's a bit like, I get social anxiety and then I'll say to myself, often it's like, well, you don't have to go.
Mm.
And then I calm down. Then I'm like, oh, I think I'll go now. Do you know what I mean?
I do, because I hate going out.
I hate going out.
But I don't even get to that point. I think I'll just put my pyjamas on.
Well, that's true. But you know, like, but it's really interesting. It's like, sometimes I...
It's a feeling of being trapped. Like, I can't get out of this. That's the thing.
The more I listen to my body, the more it pretty much tells me. You know, it's really interesting.
Mm.
It really does. Sometimes I'll go and do something and I'll come away from it and it's shifted the energy. And I'm like, okay, I'm really glad I managed that. But when there was a time, so like I had to leave Strictly Come Dancing because I was so ill.
Yes,
and I listened to my body. Best thing I ever did. Best thing I ever did.
I know. You know what? From this conversation, and I have a loose plan of what I think I'm going to talk to you about. And I have a loose plan of what I assume I might come away with, but this has been really surprising to me because the main thing I'm coming away from this conversation with, which is always a gift, is to listen to my body more, but to treat it better. And that's our discussion on mental health, is to do that bit.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting us to talk about that at all.
Yeah, it's my number one thing. Before I came out, I did 15 minutes on the mat.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll do it again. I've got a therapy session when I get back because that'll be a nice connection.
Perfect.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, Will, God, what a wonderful chat. I mean, we've not covered loads of stuff.
No,
we could do another 10 episodes.
We've covered loads of stuff.
We've covered loads, but you know, the book has got so much in it that I wanted to talk to you about, and we share a lot of common ground with experience and how we're dealing with things. So we've definitely got to do more stuff together and talk more about this stuff on and off mic. But yeah, thank you for today and for sharing your stories and for cutting through the bullshit and just being honest.
Yeah,
I haven't got time for all that bullshit. Yeah. And it's made me really think, so I'm going to really honour the body chat that we've had today.
Do you want me to tell you more about the sacking when we stop recording?
Yes, please.
All right.
Oh, I love it when that happens, when a chat just sort of goes into a completely different realm than what I thought it was going to. I really want to give some more thought to what Will was saying about the importance of physically moving trauma out of your body. I found that so interesting. I've thought about our chat non-stop since, and have found myself quoting Will in many conversations since. Be Yourself and Happier, The A to Z of Wellbeing is the title of Will's book, and it's out on the 21st of April. If you can't wait until next week for more wisdom from wonderful people, do follow us on Instagram at Happy Place Official. There's loads of lovely conversations going on there. Hopefully some support, some help, but also some things that will make you giggle and laugh as well. So do go follow us. Thank you again to brilliant Will, to the producers of this episode, Anushka Tate and Sophie King at Rethink Audio, and to you blimmin' brilliant lot for listening. I really appreciate you. Thank you. We'll chat soon.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.